Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, a healthcare summit, economic moves, and Afghan drama. In the news this week, Republicans and Democrats met on health reform, but their gap remained. The president hinted strongly that Dems will move to act alone.
I don't know, frankly, whether we can close that gap. And if we can't close that gap, then I suspect Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner are going to have a lot of arguments about procedures in Congress about moving forward.
Toyota President Akio Toyoda himself came before Congress on Wednesday and offered his big mea culpa for a motor company in trouble.
I am deeply sorry for any accident that Toyota drivers have experienced.
And while Afghan fighting goes on in the south, suicide and car bombing attacks in Kabul leave at least 18 dead. This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. You can join the conversation. What's your top story this week? What did you make of the healthcare summit? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Chicago is Steve Chapman. He's a columnist and editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune. Steve Chapman, welcome back. Good to have you.
Nice to be here, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Karen Tumulty. She's national political correspondent for Time magazine. Their big eye on the healthcare debate has seen it all, was all over it yesterday and, every day. Karen, it is great to have you with us today.
Oh, gosh, Tom, thank you so much for having me.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Steve, Karen.
A lot of snow up there in New Hampshire knocking out that big line, but we've got you there, Jack, and we're glad to have you. Let's start out with a little bit of the sound of the GOP yesterday. Here's House Minority Leader John Boehner. This is at the end of, just after, the whole 7 hours of the summit, saying it's time to start over on health care reform.
We can't do it within the framework of a 2,700-page bill. That's why the bill needs to be scrapped. We need to start over on those things that we can work together on to make health care less costly for the American people.
Scrap it, says the Republican leader. During those hours of summiteering yesterday, Obama and his former Republican rival for the presidency, John McCain, sparred. McCain pointed out what he called Obama's unsavory method of lawmaking, and the president reminded him that the 2000 campaign was over.
Now, both of us during the campaign promised change in Washington. In fact, 8 times you said that negotiations on health care reform would be conducted with the C-SPAN cameras.
Let me just make this point, John, because we're not campaigning anymore. The election's over.
I'm reminded of that every day.
My hope would be that we can just focus on the issues of how we actually get a bill done.
How we actually get the bill done, and before those hours of summiteering were over, a strong indication the Democrats will look to do it alone. Karen Tumulty, between scrap it and getting the bill done, where does the conversation stand at the end of this summit?
Well, the conversation was, although the president came in saying, I want to talk about areas of agreement and how we can bridge our differences, and there are a lot of small areas of agreement, but the fact is what this whole exercise did was reveal the fact that the philosophical differences between the two parties on health care are just too great. I mean, these are two completely different visions of how you fix the health care problem. So it became very clear by the end of the day that the Democrats have absolutely no intention of scrapping the bill and starting over, as the Republicans said, nor do they have any plan to scale it back or try to do it in a piecemeal fashion. What they are basically going to do now is go all in. They are going to try to pass this thing on Democratic votes alone. They know that time is running out for them, that, you know, every new public opinion poll seems to be showing that the public is getting closer and closer to the Republican position on this. So they've really got to move quickly and decisively if they want to get this bill done.
Karen, we'll go to the prospects for getting that done, and we'll go to the politics of yesterday. But on substance, you say there's a philosophical difference revealed. Let's make that substance. On substance, how would you describe the core positions of these two parties on health care reform?
Well, basically, the Democrats believe that the government has a major role in healthcare in establishing some basic standards. You know, what should be in a health insurance policy? You know, what are the responsibilities of businesses to provide coverage to their workers? What are the responsibilities of individuals to go out and buy coverage of their own? What are the responsibilities of insurance companies to, you know, to in terms of how they write their policies? So that's their basic philosophy. The Republicans believe that the way out of this mess is really through the free market, that if you just put enough options out there, people can go out and shop for them, and essentially that competition will solve the problems. The other really big philosophical difference is, what are we trying to do here? The Democrats have put their money down on coming as close to universal coverage as possible, and also to putting forward a comprehensive bill, a bill that attacks the whole system at once. The Republicans say, you know, this is just not something that we can afford to do right now. In fact, Lamar Alexander said, this has just basically become too complicated for Washington to even try to do.
Steve Chapman, what did you hear in the debate in the summit yesterday that we haven't heard maybe all year, or that maybe we have heard for a year?
Well, I think the president did a better job than I've ever seen him in sort of isolating what he sees as the essentials of reform. The Republicans made the point that in the polls, most people don't say they're opposed to the health care reform that's now going through Congress. And they think that if it passes, they'll get worse care at a higher cost. That's all true. The other side of that is that if you ask people about the individual elements, they generally favor them. And if you ask them what will happen if the bill doesn't pass, they think their health care costs will rise and they'll get worse care. So I think most people are apprehensive about the future because, you know, I think most people recognize that the healthcare system we've got is not really sustainable, either in cost or in all sorts of other ways.
But very different views of how to go forward, as Karen was saying, and you allude to there as well. Here's Lamar Alexander, GOP senator from Tennessee, on that front yesterday at the summit.
Our view, with all respect, is that this is a car that can't be recalled and fixed, and that we ought to start over. But we'd like to start over. When I go down on the floor, and I've been there a lot on this issue, some of my Democratic friends will say, well, Lamar, where's the Republican comprehensive bill? And I say back, well, if you're waiting for Mitch McConnell to roll in a wheelbarrow in here with a 2,700-page Republican comprehensive bill, it's not going to happen, because we've come to the conclusion that we don't do comprehensive well.
Jack Beatty, where does that leave us? The president, a lot of interaction yesterday. The Democrats pushing ahead. The Republicans saying through Lamar Alexander that we don't do comprehensive well. Don't want to do it.
Don't want to do it. And the trouble is that you really can't make much headway with small steps. For example, it seems to be popular to eliminate the pre-existing condition requirement for insurance companies. Although the Republicans don't want to do that, but that seems something very popular. But you really can't do that without requiring everybody to get insurance, because otherwise people would simply game the system. They would hold off, not buy insurance until they absolutely had to, then buy the insurance. But in order to have a mandate, you have to have subsidies for people that can't afford it. So even changing that little thing, pre-existing conditions, requires major reform. The small step subsumes the larger step.
So what did you see in the body language and the rhetoric, the substance of the day yesterday, Jack? I know you caught a lot of it.
Well, I caught all but 1 hour of it. Well, I was very impressed with the president's lucidity and dispassion, also with his patience. I think he displayed just really, I think, what a lot of people voted for him for, the pragmatic intelligence of a man concerned, above all, to get it right. And on the Republican side, and I think for reasons the president alluded to, political reasons, the Republican electorate simply does not want any part of this plan. The Republicans were all against. You know, what I think emerged clearly as anything is the Democrats want to insure 30 million people, the Republicans 3 million. The Democrats on cost control have a variety of approaches. You know, cooperatives, exchanges, all sorts of experiments within the bill to bring down costs. The Republicans, John Boehner said, the main thing that'll bring down cost is tort reform. Well, according to the Congressional Budget Office, that would bring down costs about 1.5% a year. That's not a serious proposal, just as the Republican idea to insure 3 million people out of the 47 million isn't a serious proposal.
Steve Chapman, do you think the Republicans are serious about health care reform, or do they think we got a problem, but we just can't fix it, or can't fix it now?
Well, I'd like to think they're serious about it, but, you know, the question that I, you know, keep coming back, you know, they have some ideas that I think are plausible, subsidies to purchase coverage, high-risk pools in the states, insurance exchanges, and so on. And I think those have some potential. What the disappointment is that they had a number of years where they could have enacted stuff like this, and they didn't. And I think it puts them in a pretty poor position to complain when they say, well, let's start over. Well, you know, they could have started over in 2001. And they didn't. And, it does lead you to the conclusion that they would really rather just not do anything, because that's what they did.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news this hour: the big health summit, the economy, and bombs and flags in Afghanistan. Karen Tumulty of Time Magazine is with us. Steve Chapman of the Chicago Tribune. Let's go to Evansville, Indiana, and Brianna. Brianna, you are on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
About the whole health care summit, I watched a good bit of it yesterday, and I just felt like the Republicans kept repeating the same talking points over and over, and it was really interesting how the president bringing them back to the subject over and over again. Like, he just kept saying, we need to talk about what we need to do to get the bill through, and not the talking points. And some of the theatrics from the Republican members of Congress, bill stacking them up on the table for everybody to see, that's silly. I mean, you see that on the House floor, but, I mean, in front of the president?
What would you like to see happen now, Brianna? What do you think ought to actually happen now?
Well, they're talking about this pushing it through with reconciliation. I think that's kind of a tough tactic, but, I mean, if that's what they're going to have to do to break down the Republican stonewall on the issue, then that's what they have to do if they really want to get this health care bill through.
Brianna, we got it. Thanks for your call. Let's get one more right here from Des Moines, Iowa. John, you're on the air, John.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Great show. I watched about 4 or 5 hours of that yesterday, and I am so proud of President Barack Obama. He handled that situation very well. The Republicans are delay, deny, defeat. That is their sole motivation right now. Why is 51-vote majority a bad thing? I don't see anything wrong with that, and I hope they put this through. They should put it through. If they don't do it now, it'll be 10, 15 years before they touch it again, and then there'll be 50 or 60 million people without health care coverage.
John, we've got it. Although, bear in mind, where Democrats are in the minority, they were happy to have that that filibuster supermajority power as well, but thanks for your call. And one more, Merle, Storm Lake, Iowa. Merle, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Great program. Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
Excellent, excellent. Say, I've got a very, this may be very simplistic, but I'm just a simple man with simple needs. Let me share my theory about this healthcare situation. What has come down to be is simply health insurance reform, not health care reform. Now, let me give you a simplistic scenario here. We already have, since Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society, socialized medicine in the form of Medicare and Medicaid. Now, tell me why this is so difficult. Why could we not take everybody to 65 plus and convert Medicaid to the senior form of Medicare? Everybody 65 or 64 and less would be on Medicare. Then the insurance companies can sell a supplement to either plan. We have socialized medicine. We have the insurance companies taken care of, and everybody's happy.
John,
Why is that so difficult to understand?
Hey, Merle, I'm trying to figure where you're coming from here. What are your political leanings, Merle?
My political leanings, Tom, is that I was a staunch Republican for many, many years. But government simply right now is not working for anybody. I would have to say right now, I would be an independent, leaning towards a Tea Party, leaning towards let's go dump the tea in the Boston Harbor and start this whole bad boy over again, because it's not working for the American public. These people are not serving their constituents. They're serving themselves and the special interests. Lobbying has to stop.
Merle, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. A lot of theater yesterday. Brianna in Evansville talked about it. Here's a little bit from Senator Jay Rockefeller, West Virginia Democrat, talking about insurance companies.
The health insurance industry is the shark that swims just below the water. And you don't see that shark until you feel the teeth of that shark.
And here's House Minority Whip Eric Cantor saying the country just can't afford the president's plan.
When you start to mandate that everyone in this country have insurance, and you lay on top of that now the mandates that we all would like to see in a perfect world, there are consequences to that. We just can't afford this.
Jack Beattie, what did you make of the theater yesterday? We had a lot of street theater last summer, Tea Party and all the rest, on health care. Yesterday was Summit Theater. How did that piece, I don't know how many people watched a whole lot of this, but how did it work out? People will see and hear chunks.
I think Brianna touched on the visual props, the big stacks of bills that various Republicans had. One looked like it was every bill that had ever been passed in the U.S. Congress.
That might just be the health bill, Jack.
Hmm?
That might just be
it
the health
bill. Might just be the bill, yeah. And President Obama, of course, made a sardonic comment on that when Eric Cantor was about to speak. The president said, don't tell me that stack of paper in front of you is the bill, right? And he says, yes, Mr. President, that's right. You know, this whole business of the size of bills, any big bill is a big bill. It takes a lot of space. I remember Jim Fallows going into this in the 90s when President Clinton's health care bill was submitted. The Republicans made so much of the fact that it was 1,300 pages. And Fallows read it, and he said, you needed every single page in order to deal with all the complexities involved. Any bill gets to be, you know, 1,000, 2,000 pages, especially something so comprehensive as this.
Steve Chapman, where do you see the battle of theater at the end of this summit and looking toward maybe the Democrats moving alone?
Well, I think that was most of the point of this whole summit. I think there was probably, you know, the president probably figured there was about a 20% chance that he would find some common ground with Republicans, that they would be able to come up with a few proposals that they could all agree on. And I think probably he thought there was an 80% chance that they wouldn't, and that this would kind of provide the basis for him to say, look, we did our best to find common ground. We couldn't do it. The Republicans wouldn't cooperate. So we're going to have to move ahead regretfully on our own. I think it was good theater on the president's part. I think the Republicans, probably people who were inclined to agree with them to begin with, were probably confirmed in that. But for the people in the middle and for Democrats who want the president and the Congress to go ahead, I think it'll serve the purpose of making that easier to do.
Karen, do you think the theater was good enough from the Democrats' point of view to line up congressional Democrats behind the president, enough of them to push this through?
I actually think the far more important development in terms of getting those Democratic votes that you're going to need in the House and the Senate was not the healthcare summit yesterday, but rather the bill that the president put forward on Monday, which was specifically designed to take the Senate bill, which is what we're talking about here, and make enough tweaks and changes to it to bring aboard enough House members. And that is really the product that Nancy Pelosi is going to have to be trying to sell to her House members, because I personally think the biggest hurdle here is getting the House to first pass the underlying Senate bill.
Mm-hmm.
So Nancy Pelosi is going to have to take this bill, this new bill, to her members and say, look, they fixed a lot of our concerns. You guys have already voted for this one thing once. The political damage has been done. And if we do not follow through with this, then the country is going to question whether the Democrats have the capacity to govern.
But is her job of persuasion to get in the progressives who are upset because there was no public option, or to get in the moderates who are afraid that public opinion may bite them in the polls this fall if they do vote for it?
she's got to get everything going because she, I think she passed it on something like 5 votes last November 7th. She has, one of her yes votes has retired. Another one has since died. She is working on no margin for error here.
Let's go to Paul in Boston. Paul, you're on the air.
I hear my question may have been answered to some degree just now. I was wondering if they were going to go with the reconciliation option, if they would delete some of those portions that perhaps Democrats and Republicans may have found objectionable, the alleged backroom deals, because they didn't need 60 votes anymore. I made understand they only need 51 votes. Could they take away some of those provisions that seem to give preference only to certain states?
Let us pick it up, Paul. Karen, how about it? There was a lot of talk about backroom deals yesterday.
That has, in fact, been done in the new legislation. For instance, the now famous Cornhusker kickback used to get Ben Nelson's vote is gone. In its place is a new funding formula that would help all of the states pay for the additional people that would be put on their Medicaid rolls. It was interesting yesterday, one of the more interesting exchanges for those of us who've been living in the weeds on this for the last year was between John McCain and Barack Obama, where McCain brought up a special deal that was cut for Bill Nelson of Florida, where essentially the rest of the country would lose its subsidies for a special program called Medicaid Advantage, but Florida would get to keep it. Mm-hmm. And when Obama heard McCain's complaint about this, he said, "You know what? I think you're right." So I you could hear the sound of Bill Nelson getting thrown under the bus there too.
Under
maybe
he goes.
Barry Landrieu soon to join him. Doesn't the Louisiana purchase still stand, or is that what's the status of that, Karen?
You know, that one, I don't know whether that is in or out at the moment, but I suspect by the time this is all done with, it will be out.
We're going to hear a lot about it in the week ahead. Harry in Mansfield, Massachusetts. Harry, you're on the air.
Hi. This is a question for Jack Beattie.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they reinstitute the public option? This bill is really a bonanza for the insurance companies. And maybe they should look at the veterans' health care system, which is really a universal healthcare system in this country, and do away with all these things. Make the bill simple. Do a public option and leave it at that.
Jack, Harry wants to make you king of the mountain. What do you do?
Well, I'm all for it, Harry. but I guess it's radioactive enough in the House, I would think. I mean, you know, the Blue Dog Democrats have to run in red states, and they're an electorate that is not predisposed to favor President Obama, and in fact, predisposed to believe the worst of him. And so anything that smacks of, you know, that can narrow that charge of socialism is, I think, just toxic. And the public option, unfortunately, falls under that rhetorical cloud. I agree that the bill would be better if it had that. It would be better in terms of cost control. And the Democrats say, well, the exchanges can make up for it because in exchanges, people who in the individual market can go and pool their resources and that way drive down costs. Well, all that remains to be seen. But I am sorry Karen, what did you hear about that? Why did the president leave it out?
I think that the public option, which I believe is it's different from what the caller was suggesting—a single payer system, mm-hmm. where the whole country would essentially be in a program like Medicare. The public option was initially designed to be a relatively small feature of this bill. And it took on such ideological freight with, you know, the left saying that this was, you know, a bill. People like Howard Dean, I believe, was on this show with me last time
mm-hmm.
I was on,
yep.
saying that a bill without a public option was just not worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the right saying that this is just the, you know, prelude to the total government takeover of healthcare. You know, I don't think that either of those things are true, but they nonetheless, it just became so ideologically freighted that I think it threatened to bring down the whole bill.
Let's get to Alec in Toronto. Alec, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi. I don't know whether you'd like to have the opinion of an unbiased person, Okay.
You're Canadian, so you're unbiased? Okay, we'll think about that.
You know, I mean, perhaps I'm a bit biased because we have a single-payer system here.
Yeah.
And I love it. Everybody loves it. And, of course, I pay fairly high taxes. But, you know, Mr. Obama, I guess he was, Congressman Obama, he ran on reforming the health system. And over a year ago, and I think he's been very patient, you know. But the Republicans, I've watched very closely, and the Republicans seem to stonewall him and try to prevent him at every turn. I wonder whether it's in their mind that they managed when you had a previous president who tried it, they managed to not to have a reform of the health system, and they think they're trying the same game.
Alec, I think you've got a pretty good bead on American politics from your Canadian bench there. Point taken. Let me get one from Nashville. Greg, you're on the air, Greg.
Hello. I felt it was, yes, I heard a few of you speak how well Mr. Obama managed it yesterday, but it was pretty much I heard it's my way or the highway.
Mm-hmm. It was at the end of the day, wasn't it?
I also feel that, I think Steve mentioned that, you know, like the Republicans had 8 years to try to put this through. But basically, they tried to reform Social Security, and the Democrats shot that down.
Turnabout's fair play? Is that what you're saying, Greg?
Well, I'm hearing, you know, like it's the Democrats were not fair when Social Security reform was being trying to be reformed.
Steve Chapman in Chicago, what do you say? Are we going to have this, you know, turnabout argument on every major piece of reform effort in this country, whoever puts it up?
Well, the Democrats, the Republicans had wanted to reform Social Security, they had the votes to do it. They had control of both houses of Congress and they had the presidency. The Democrats are now in that position. And, you know, the problem here is not so much uniting Democrats, although there's obviously a lot of division about the particulars of the bill in the Democratic Party. It's about whether or not they can get it through the Senate because of the filibuster problem. I think, as I said before, I think what the president was doing here was sort of laying the groundwork for moving ahead in whatever fashion he needs to get it through both houses of Congress. And I think in those terms, it was probably a fairly effective performance.
Karen, we're going to turn to other news right after a break here. We've got 1 minute. Handicap the way ahead for us. How do you see it? They need every vote in the House, you say. What about there? What about the Senate? Do you think this will happen or not?
Well, I just looking at the past year, I would never bet against Nancy Pelosi to get something through the House if she really wants it. And I do think at this point the Senate probably would have at least the 51 votes that it would need to get this done in reconciliation. But that is not to say this is going to be easy or pretty.
Not easy or pretty. And if they bloody scrape it through, Jack, is that good or bad for the Democrats in November midterms?
It's essential for them. It avoids the possibility of a 1994 repeat. As you recall, the Democrats couldn't get even a vote on their health care bill. The result was disillusioned Democrats in the fall, motivated Republicans, a huge Republican sweep. Also, when you start to look at the polling, in 2008, the exit poll showed that only 9% of Americans thought health care was the main issue. But of that 9%, 74% of them voted for Obama. And that contributed something like 4 points to his victory over McCain. The point is, that's the Democratic base you have to deliver for.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. Elsewhere in the news this week, a shocker in full view in Florida as a giant killer whale kills his trainer. Here's Dan Brown, president of SeaWorld Orlando.
It's with great sadness that I report that one of our most experienced animal trainers drowned in an incident with one of our killer whales this afternoon. We've initiated an investigation to determine to the extent possible what occurred.
Reigning world champion South Korean Kim Yoon-na, nicknamed the Queen, won figure skating gold at the Vancouver Olympics.
And the crowd mesmerized during her skate, leaping to their feet. The coronation is complete. Long live the Queen!
And speaking of Johnny Cash, Apple iTunes celebrated its 10 billionth download on Thursday. The song, the 10 billionth song, Guess Things Just Happened That Way, by Johnny Cash.
Well, you ask me if I'll forget my baby. I guess I will someday. I don't like it, but I guess things happen that way.
We're looking at a week in the news, the health summit, the economy, bombs and flags in Afghanistan with Karen Tumulty, Time Magazine, Steve Chapman of the Chicago Tribune. I promise we will get out of Washington, but one more touch there, a $15 billion jobs bill. Speaking of who's voting for what, and the new Republican in the U.S. Senate, Scott Brown of Massachusetts, in Ted Kennedy's old seat, voting for this jobs bill. Here's Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer praising Republicans who joined the Democratic majority there.
It's bipartisan. For the first time on a major issue facing Washington, Democrats and Republicans have joined together. I want to thank Orrin Hatch. He really reached out, and we sat down together and said, let's find something we can agree on. It's not going to solve the whole problem, but it's a really good start.
Jack Beatty, what do you make of the handful of Republican senators who voted for this $15 billion jobs bill, including Scott Brown?
That was, I think, a very good move for Mr. Brown, given his constituency in Massachusetts. And he said that he'd be independent, and I think he's shown it now. If this isn't his first vote, it's one of his first votes. It was very interesting about that bill. Something like six, I think, Republican senators voted to filibuster the bill, to continue the filibuster. And then when the filibuster was defeated, they voted for the bill, which is, I guess, calling it having your cake and eating it. But that's all right. And the Democrats, I think, can rightly point to something. They did get something done. It wasn't much. And also the House this week, by 400 votes, they voted to take away the antitrust exemption for insurance companies. That was massively bipartisan.
We'll see where that goes. But in the Senate, they were against it before they were for it. The economy woven through all of this. And Ben Bernanke, Fed Reserve Chairman, before the House Financial Services Committee on Wednesday, saying we're going to have low interest rates for a long time.
The FOMC continues to anticipate that economic conditions, including low rates of resource utilization, subdued inflation trends, and stable inflation expectations, are likely to warrant exceptionally low levels of the federal funds rate for an extended period.
Steve Chapman, we saw the news this morning. In the last quarter of 2009, it wasn't just that 5.7% growth in GDP that we'd been told earlier, 5.9%. Many people saying, though, that was a one-time surge there. Markets all over the place this week. What's your gut on the economy, Steve?
Well, you know, it's very hard to know. It's because we've never had an economy quite like going through something quite like what we have in the last couple of years. My feeling is that it's probably we're in for a steady recovery. It's not going to be really fast, but I think the surge in the fourth quarter is a good sign that things are going in the right direction. And barring something unforeseen, war with Iran or something like that, I don't really see any reason that things shouldn't stay on track. But it's going to take a while for unemployment to come down, as even the administration admits.
Let's go to John in Nashville, Tennessee. John, you're on the air.
Hi, this is John from Nashville.
Hi.
Regarding the unemployment in the United States, I just think that a lot of people are less willing to take on jobs that are, below their standards or whatever. I just think that if Americans were more willing to take on jobs that were less desirable or whatever, the unemployment rate wouldn't be at the point that it is right now.
Do you think? Does that mean, John, that you think that Americans should now accept a lower standard of living? Is that implicit in what you're saying? Are you ready to do that?
Well, I mean, the thing is, people want to sit around and complain about not having jobs and, the job market, not having jobs available in their specific job market. But, if people were willing to kind of step out of the box a little bit and, take on jobs that, they wouldn't have anything to complain about.
Except maybe a lower wage, as you say, but if that's what it takes to get by. I hear it, Karen. I know health has been your sole focus here, but we all live in this economy. Do you get the feeling the country's ready to take John's advice, kind of step down, do whatever, or are there even those jobs there if people are ready to take a lower wage?
Well, I do. I mean, at least if you read the reports, there is a lot fewer jobs out there than there used to be. So it isn't, I don't think, just necessarily, you know, as though there are all these jobs out there going begging at the moment. And then, you know, there are questions of your situation in life. I mean, some people are not physically able or, you know, able to sort of pick up their family and move to a completely different part of the country or whatever. So it's a tough, it's really a tough situation, I think, for a lot of people out there in the country.
Big automotive story with feet in Japan and this country, turning a lot of heads this week as the CEO, the head of Toyota, the grandson of the founder, came to apologize before Congress. Emotional testimony there at the House Committee for Oversight and Government Reform. Faye Lastrella testified on Wednesday. Her two grown children, granddaughter and son-in-law, all died when the accelerator on their Lexus got stuck, the accident that brought the country's attention to Toyota's troubles.
Thank you for inviting me here and giving me the opportunity to speak for my four siblings, to testify with Toyota recall as they relate to my beloved family, who were taken prematurely away from us. I would not discuss or talk about the accident, as we have heard enough.
Heard enough, maybe. Seen and heard enough, certainly, with all the cell phones and videos surrounding these people, you know, calling in saying, I can't stop my car. Talk about gripping. Toyota President Akio Toyota apologized, promised changes in how his company operates. Here he is speaking at this point through an interpreter.
I personally intend to make very strong commitment to make the safety and customer first as the priority and top priority of the company, and to that end, to make sweeping change within the company under my own personal leadership.
And here's Ohio Democratic Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur after hearing nearly 3 hours of apology from the Toyota president, still unhappy with his explanation.
Mr. Toyota, I am not satisfied with your testimony. I'm being very forthcoming. I do not feel it reflects sufficient remorse for those who have died, and I do not think you have accurately reflected the large number of complaints that have been filed with Toyota for nearly a decade. So I, as one member, am disappointed.
Steve Chapman in Chicago, what do you think? Is this the sound of the now number one automaker in the world, you know, tipping, falling, or temporary setback? Is there room in this under the covers? Is this about, you know, GM and the U.S. looking for a way back at Toyota's expense? It's
well,
down
I think
in trouble.
This was mostly political theater.
Mm-hmm.
I think the guy in charge of Toyota knows a lot more about making cars and making cars safe than a congresswoman from Ohio. The fact is,
but we're talking about criminal investigation, about problems potentially in the electronics. I have no idea, but it surely makes some potential buyers nervous when they're thinking about their next car purchase.
Yeah, I'm sure it does, and I think it's something that Toyota is going to have to fix. But if you look at any data, Toyota is one of the safest makes on the road, has one of the lowest rates of defects, one of the lowest, almost all of its models score very well on death rate for drivers. So I think, once, the congressional theater is passed and people, look at, the real information we have about Toyotas compared to other cars, I think they'll probably come back. There are an awful lot of loyal Toyota owners mm-hmm. who have never had a problem like this. And the number of cars that have been affected in this, the number of people who have actually had accidents as a result is, for the people involved, it's enormous. But compared to the entire auto market, it's very, very small.
Let's go to Dave.
Yes,
Karen, please.
If I could just say, this is really only the beginning of the congressional hearings mm-hmm. on this issue. And, hopefully what they're going to focus on going forward is, what we can do to make sure that this doesn't happen again, whether we have the right regulatory structure in place to keep up with the technological developments of, the high technology stuff that goes into a car these days.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling. And yet where the regulatory structure is way behind it. And also whether we have the right systems in place for the automakers and the regulators to be communicating about these problems. So, you know, hopefully something comes out of this that affects not just Toyota, but every automaker.
Let's go to Dave in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm calling because I think that this Toyota case is a typical example of what goes on often, which is large political theater around problems that Congress can score points on, but that not actually do very much about. We have a regulatory system that sort of follows up on these sorts of problems and fixes things and enforces rules and such. This is much easier for Congress to talk about and look angry about than something complicated like health care, but I wish that they would spend more time on these more substantive issues.
Well, you may be right, David. They spent most of a year on health care. Mr. Toyota himself said in Toyota's rush to become number one, they had lost sight of quality. And as to regulation, clearly it didn't work here. I mean, should Congress just – you think it's a tempest in a teapot?
They absolutely made a mess, but – you know, we have a Traffic and Safety Administration. What we didn't need was a whole bunch of congressmen sitting there and parading how angry they were for the cameras. I don't think that actually has a significant impact.
I hear you. Though, of course, we did it on steroids and baseball. And you know, it is interesting, Jack, now that the U.S. government is a part owner of Toyota's major competitor.
And this came up in questioning yesterday to Ray LaHood, the Transportation Secretary. I think a representative from Utah said, would we be this tough on GM? And he said, of course, Hood said, yes, of course we would. We're taking everything very seriously. But, you know, I really joined Dave in this. I watched maybe an hour and a half of this hearing, and it was really abject to see some of these Congress people. They were actually bringing up issues from their district. You know, Mrs. Jones has a trouble with her ignition. Now, I want you, Mr. Toyota, will you call her and make sure that, yes, I mean, it was, and they were deliberately misunderstanding what the Toyota people were trying to say and turning things into political speeches. It was the worst example of that kind of pandering that Congress does. And how many of those people on that committee, you know, just reflexively vote for deregulation for almost anything? I'd hate to know.
Let's go to Charleston, South Carolina, and Ike. Ike, you are on the air.
Yes, sir. I hope you can't hear the steam shooting out of my ears. You know, I heard this phone caller call up and say that American workers need to bite the bullet and take these cheap little jobs that are out here, these McJobs that have been created.
Yeah.
Let me point something out. The unions have been taking contract cuts to the point that they're paying $14 an hour for union workers to put cars together. I live in North Charleston, where we just brought in Boeing into North Charleston. The government gave them $900 million worth of write-off. And
yeah.
You know what?
What?
We're going to have to spend $155 million to fix the roads around here so we can accommodate them. I am sick and tired of the people on the top and these other people out here that seem to think that American labor is not worth being paid a decent living wage to where we can afford health insurance and we can afford these things that we need to afford. So for that caller, I'll tell you what, buddy, you cut your pay in half and you take a little crappy job and you work for nothing and then you can call back and tell me how great it is that you got that job.
Ike, it could not be more loud and clear, steam included, and we thank you for your call. Jack Beatty, that is the iceberg in the ocean for all politicians this year. If they're not paying attention to that, watch out.
That's right, and they have to watch any comment that seems to say that you know, unemployment is, there have been some comments from Republicans, for example, that it's turning into a kind of, it's sapping the initiative of American workers. They're not going out and trying those jobs. You know, six Americans are applying for each open job. I think that's the latest statistic, something like that. We had someone on our show say that he was actually hiding his educational credentials in job applications so that he could be eligible for the job. Think of what that means. And I'm sure his name is Legion. So I'm very much with Ike. People are hurting.
Ike, thanks for your call. We've barely got time to look abroad, though. It's been a very interesting week in Afghanistan. Steve Chapman, in a nutshell, we've got the Afghan government's flag up over Marja in the south, where the big Marine offensive has been alongside Afghan troops. And then just this morning, big suicide bombing and car bomb in Kabul, at least 18 dead. What do you see coming out of Afghanistan, Steve?
Well, I think the story that got overlooked this week with the Marine offensive in Marja is what President Karzai did, which is he changed the law so that he gets to appoint a majority of the members of the Electoral Complaint Commission so that
How convenient.
He won't have the problem he had with the last election, which is this commission saying, you know, you rigged things, this was not a fair election. And it points up to the real problem in Afghanistan, which is, you can win the war militarily and you can lose it politically. And the guy we've got in Kabul right now is pretty much losing it.
Pretty much losing it. The Marines say they've made progress. We heard NPR reporting this morning, Karen, though, that the press in Afghanistan with civilian casualties has not been so great on this offensive.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think Marja is really more than anything it's a template for what we would like to see, not necessarily what we are seeing on a broad scale.
And even there, Jack, 27 dead. General McChrystal on television apologizing last week, and every effort being made to avoid it. But nevertheless, there's a civilian population in the middle of this war.
50 dead in the last 2 weeks across Afghanistan. This is becoming a big issue in the Afghan parliament. Two members of the parliament have called for the execution of soldiers found who've killed civilians. So, yes, this is a great threat to our whole adventure there.
We will be paying more attention there. Steve Chapman with the Chicago Tribune joining us today from Chicago. Steve, it's great to have you back. Thanks so much for being here.
Great to be here.
Karen Tumultes, thanks so much for all your expertise on the healthcare front. You're terrific. Thanks for joining us, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jack, thanks for being here, my friend.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.